welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
This is Jessica with Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast, and I am dreaming of being on a tropical island today. I have not been on vacation for a very, very long time, as most people I'm sure can say, because our guest today is an author and works as a flight attendant and wrote this amazing book called The Layover, which is a rom-com and has a cover that will make you want to grab a pina colada.
First of all, there will be no pina colada having. This is a Belize Breeze kind of book.
If you're Belize
book. Yeah.
Belize Breeze. Okay, Belize Breeze it is then. So The Layover, first of all, tell us about the plot of The Layover and just sort of how it came to be.
Okay, so The Layover is about a flight attendant who grew up with very kind of wanderlusty parents and did not have a stable childhood. And she finds herself in this job from the time she's young because she wasn't able to like go to college or anything. And, but it was not her dream. Like her dream was to be stable and have this very like normal sedentary existence. So she meets and happens on like the second page. So it's not a spoiler, but she is newly engaged to this man, Alexander. And it's kind of an agreement between them that now that this is committed, she's going to quit her job and they're going to have this nice, normal life. And so this is her last trip she's ever going to work. She goes on a 3-day work trip and it's supposed to be the end of everything. And she ends up having to work with this guy who she despises. And then there is a maintenance issue and they get stuck in Belize. And that's the story.
It sounds like the perfect setup for a hate-to-love rom-com. I think everybody's ready to go on a vacation. But I'm curious, so you, like I mentioned before, you're a flight attendant. How did you become a flight attendant? How did you get into that career? Do you have any connections to Ava in that way?
I actually always wanted to be a flight attendant. When I was a kid, my mom's friend quit her job and became a flight attendant. And it was like such a shocking thing for her to do at the time. And it was just like she was running away from her life. And I was like, I'm not even an adult yet and I already want to run away from my life. So I love that. So I always wanted to be a flight attendant. And I did not realize how hard it is to get a job as a flight attendant. And I had started working in restaurants when I was 15. I spoke conversational Spanish and Arabic. I spent some time in Egypt and picked up a lot. So I put that on my application, probably beefed up my abilities a little bit in those languages. And still, I did not get a single interview. And then I had a friend whose dad worked for, I think he was president of like the union or something for Southwest. And he wrote me a reference letter. And I found out later, like they go through hiring periods where they will literally only look at applications that have a reference from somebody within the company attached. So thank goodness, because that changed my whole life.
That's amazing. I had no idea. And it's funny because you are actually the second flight attendant turned author that we have spoken to this month. The first one was TJ Newman, who wrote Falling, which is like not at all like The Layover at all. That is a thriller, which is described as Jaws in the air. This is not a thriller, but I believe people will enjoy it just as much, because I'm of the mind that there are different kind of beach reads. There are the beach reads that have you sweating because of what's going on the page. And there are the beach reads that you can just breathe out, put your feet in the sand, and pick it up like a literary cocktail. And I that this is what's going on here. Rom-coms are sort of like the polar opposite of thrillers, because often both of them involve sort of anxiety about what's going to happen next. Like with a rom-com, usually there's embarrassment, or with this situation, Ava meets up with Jack, who she just absolutely cannot stand. And even though you kind of know that things are going to go in a romantic way, you also know there's going to be embarrassment. So either way, your heart is going to be thumping. So I think it's really cool that these two books kind of came on our radar at the same time. Is there a lot like within the relationship of the cruise? Is there usually, I mean, do romances happen, or is it sort of like you're more like family?
I mean, there are a lot of women flight attendants. It's not often that heterosexual woman and a heterosexual male even find themselves on the same crew. I think there is quite a bit of overlap between flight attendants and pilots, so that's probably a little more normal. But it is, I mean, I said in the book, and I don't think most people know this, but you fly with somebody, and for 3 days, you and your crew, like, you talk, well, okay. First of all, you're with the same flight attendants for all 3 days, but often the pilots are coming and going. Like, you don't typically have them for 3 days. And the flight attendants, like, you end up talking for 3 days solid. You share a million things, and then you don't see that person again for 10 years. And this person you've shared all your, like, deepest secrets with, you look at them and you are like, hey, you look familiar. Have we flown together before? So it's a very, very odd dynamic.
So it's not as small a world as I think some people believe it to be.
Well, yeah, I mean, you always see it. Like, I just watched The Flight Attendant, the HBO Max show.
Oh, the Chris Bojalian, based on the Chris Bojalian book. Yes.
Yes, and it was amazing. But they were like flying with the same people the whole time, and I was like, well, wouldn't that be fun? Because I've never had a job in my whole life where I have like a community built in. Like, instead, I have these intense fleeting connections. But yeah, like So our schedules are seniority based. Like, every month we bid for our schedules and it goes according to seniority. And one of my best friends in the whole world, I met at training 16 years ago. Our seniority numbers are one number apart. We're based in the same base and we try to fly together. And in 16 years, we've flown together 3 times.
Wow.
Right?
Wow. This is so informative. I think any of our listeners who might even be thinking about going into aviation in this way, you might not fly with your bestie. Maybe that's a good thing, because I know, you know, sometimes too much bestie time is difficult. But 3 times, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And it might be different. It might be different at smaller airlines. I work for a major airline, so there are a lot of us. But yeah, that's with active effort. We still only manage to fly together 3 times.
So I may or may not have glanced at your Twitter, and you write on it that you are an officially published author, congratulations, and that your 8-year-old self would be so proud. Was there a time when, before you aspired to be a flight attendant, that you also wanted to be an author? And now you're both, so that's cool.
It is cool. I definitely, I don't know that I wanted to be an author. I thought I was an author. So I kind of already achieved that goal, but I didn't know that it wasn't published. But yeah, I very much would write stories in my notebooks and act like that was a book. And then I went through a journalism phase when I was very young, where I would like collect stories about people in the neighborhood and get them all down on the white sheet paper, you know, and then I would print them, like I would photocopy them and staple them all together, and then I would sell them to our neighbors like it was a newspaper.
Yeah, I had some friends, I think, and I tried this too, but I wasn't as committed as they were, who tried to sell their stories like the Babysitters Club. Like they had editions, and then they draw things on the back, like if you want to join my club, you know, like talk to me at my parents' house, because this was the 80s and email addresses didn't exist. It's just, it's exciting to hear that now you've got your feet in both worlds. Did you write while you were flying? And have you ever had like a layover, like the one in the book?
Yes, I definitely wrote while I was flying. I mean, sometimes we'll do really long flights that won't be full and we'll end up getting that back row. And I mean, you could sit down with a cocktail napkin and start jotting things down, you know, but like in the book, I point out that there's a lot of standing time, like the doing the service, the interacting with customers, that's like entertaining and it goes quickly, but like silently taking off, silently landing, so like being in the back for 10 minutes while you're thinking they're going to start boarding at any minute. You can't touch your phone. You can't read anything. You're just kind of there. Like that's when I do a lot of my strategizing and stuff. And then hotel rooms, like I do AM, so I start super early, and then I'm generally like settled into a hotel room by 2 p.m. So when I'm in my writing mode, like I'll write from 2 to 9 and I don't do anything else. There's kind of only so much. I mean, you've read on the plane, you run out of Netflix shows, like you've got to have a project. So that's where I did that. I have had some like reroutes and ended up in places I didn't expect to be. But my craziest layover story was actually in Nashville, where I live. I was commuting Nashville to Chicago for my first couple years. And so I would try to get layovers in Nashville so that I could like go home. I could have a car. I could do something other than be in the hotel. So I had a layover and I was junior back then. So I didn't get my AMs. So I was on a PM. So I had gotten in late, but I had this whole day in Nashville. And I don't think I reported to the airport till like 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So I call my friend Carrie, who's supposed to be working like a proper adult, but I'm like, what are you doing? And she says, okay, quick backstory. She had bought a new house and she had moved into it, but she had been unable to sell her old house. So I asked her what she's doing. And she's like, well, I went to check on the old house and there was this like written sign on the door that said, please leave package by door. Just went out. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
Wait, and what?
Yeah. So of course I'm like, so somebody's having something delivered to your house? And she's like, I think they are. And I'm like, so it must be illegal, right? And she's like, that's what I'm thinking. And I'm like, well, what are we going to do? And she's like, well, I guess we're going to have to stake it out and figure out what's happening. So we decide we're going to do an old-fashioned stakeout. So I swap my car. I get in her car. We get junk food and we park a few driveways down and we stare at her house and we're like doing a full on stakeout. But then we very quickly realize at some point I got to be at the airport and this is a little boring. So we need a new plan. So we start calling the different delivery companies and her name is still listed on the house. So she can say, I have a package being delivered. Can you tell me what time it's coming? And we end up finding that it's coming from FedEx and it is showing up in like 30 minutes. And we're like, okay, we have we can sit here for 30 minutes or we can, we got 28 minutes to do something. So we go to the Kinko's and we get a FedEx box and we stuff it full of all the trash in the back of our car. And then we put it by the door. And we have this plan that when the delivery man drops off the new package, we're going to get that package. And then we're going to let them get the decoy package, whoever ordered it. And we're going to follow them to wherever they're going. And we're going to like call the cops on them. I don't know. We hadn't thought that far. So we do it. It's all working well, except we see the FedEx van coming down the road and behind it, there's a car slowly trailing it. And we're like, oh my gosh, they too know what time it's coming and they are here. So how are we going to like swap the packages if they're here? So we decide, okay, we're just going to do it right in front of them and at least we'll have their package. So she... it's supposed to go right in front of the house and I'm going to run up and grab the package and then get back in her car. But she panics at the last minute and parks still two driveways away. So now I'm running. I run up. I throw my package on the door. I grab the new package, except our package is a normal like dress size box. The new package stretches from my chest to my toes. It is almost as long as my body. And so, and I'm 5 foot tall. So I'm trying to run. It's banging against my knees. This other car is watching us and I throw it in the back of her car, jump in, she spins around, starts driving, and the bad guy flips the U-turn and starts chasing us. And the poor FedEx driver is just watching all this go down, like, what is happening? But when a 5 foot tall girl with purpose runs at you and grabs the package out of your hand, I guess you just let her go, because he did. So we are driving, the guy's chasing us. And then we spot a cop car pull into an apartment complex across the street and we shoot across the street. We pull it next to him. The other guy's circling. End of story. It ended up being 8 shrink wrapped bags of weed. And then I had to change in my car and go straight to the airport because this had all taken so long. So I was like totally part of a real deal drug bust. And then I'm like, in uniform, in high heels, like with my crew. It was the most surreal transition of all time.
So my question now is that your next book? Because that is too strange not to somehow work into a story.
Right?
Yeah.
It was such a, I've had some bizarre layovers, but that one takes the cake. Like just coming from the adrenaline rush to all of a sudden, and it was like a Thursday afternoon off season. So the airport is like that kind of quiet with the elevator music playing and we're all fancy in our dresses and our heels. And I was like, how am I here now?
Wow. That is absolutely incredible. Like I said, I think that that's material for a book, which I guess I'm asking you if you're working on something new.
I actually, during the pandemic, my airline offered voluntary leave and I took it and I pounded out book two and it has been approved and finished and signed off on and it is off my plate. So I am done with book two.
Excellent. That's really exciting. And this one just came out in June. Am I correct?
It came out 2 days ago.
Wow. Okay. So just for our listeners, because this is going to air a little bit later, today is June 17th. So when can we expect book two?
I'm imagining, I don't think the schedule is solidified, but I was casually told June of next year.
Okay, so hopefully we will have a new Lacey Walden beach read every summer in June. One thing I wanted to mention is also on your Twitter, there's a picture of you in front of a Little Free Library.
Oh, yeah.
We at the library here have 3, soon to hopefully be 4 Little Free Libraries that we maintain. Are you a fan of them? Do you see many of them in your travels?
I love little free libraries, and I live in D.C., so there are, I live on Capitol Hill, so there are loads of them. There's actually one directly across the street from my house, and I will write at this little desk upstairs that stares out over it, and I constantly see people stopping and, like, rummaging through, and I'll be like, okay, what I'm writing is going to end up in there, so you got to go. Get it done.
It's very exciting. I think it's been, like, a really cool outreach tool for the library, and hopefully for authors as well. I mean, you know, when your book is in the hand of somebody, whether it gets in one way or the other, it hopefully creates desire to read more of your books, which, you know, will be like somebody in the airport bookstore and saying, I picked up Lacey Walden's book at a library or a little free library, and now there's another one. I am going to purchase this from the bookshop.
That'd be amazing.
So my last thing I wanted to ask you is, it says in your bio that you are a wannabe Winchester brother. So you're a Supernatural fan?
It's so funny that you're all over Twitter, because I haven't done Twitter since like January. I just showed back up on it on Tuesday for launch day. So I forget all this stuff. But yes, when I set up Twitter last year, I'm always a big Supernatural fan, and I want to be brothers with them, and I want to hang out, and I want to like fight the bad guys, and then sometimes end up fighting the good guys too. Like, I like how they just kind of end up fighting everyone. It's very exciting to me.
Would you ever yourself write in that genre, or is it more consumable thing for you?
Yeah, I don't think so. If I'm going to live in something all the time, I want it to be like really happy and bright and fun. So it's fine, like when I'm binging Supernatural and they're sad and stressed, like I can be there with them for a few hours. But writing, man, that just, you're immersed in it for the entirety of that book. Like, you're thinking about the characters when you're not writing, you're trying to figure out what's going to, but you're like living in that world. So I kind of need that to be a bright and happy world. Before I got signed by my agent, I had written another book that was more women's fiction, and it was a lot more kind of serious, and I won't say literary because that sounds like it succeeded, but the goal was to be more literary. And I worked on that for like a year and a half. Like, I would finish it, I would send it out to people, I'd get feedback. And I worked on it until the feedback was coming back, like everybody loved it. And then it came time to submit it to agents. And I just realized, like, I'm so sick of living in this serious world. I can't possibly continue to talk about this for another however many years. You know, if best case scenario, it gets picked up, then I'm living in this world for that long. So all that work, I ended up trashing it.
That's interesting. And that's kind of an interesting point. I guess, do you feel that, like, if a writer was to come out with something literary fiction, like you were saying, that they're forever pegged in that world? Like, let's say they wanted to shift gears, do you think it would be more difficult to break out of that?
I mean, I'm new enough to the industry that I couldn't really answer that, but I didn't really even mean that, like they were trapped in that genre. I meant more like, okay, when you get signed by an agent, then you do revisions with the agent, then the book gets bought, then you do revisions with the editor.
So you're still living in the world is what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
It comes out and you're talking about it. And I mean, for some people, like, they're very deep anyway. So they're thinking about those deep things and they're talking about, I'm super shallow. Like, I just kind of want to watch a sitcom and like drink Cherry Coke Zero. Like, so I don't want to talk about serious stuff all the time.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us. Hopefully we'll be chatting about book two sometime next year. And how's the flying industry? Is it heating up again? Obviously it slowed down, but do you find that people are more comfortable flying now that the pandemic seems to be winding down?
Everything is packed. All the flights are totally packed. And it's great because we need the business, but people are, it's hot and people have to wear masks and they're super annoyed by the masks. So, and I get it. I hate the mask. Like, you work on a plane for 12 hours in a mask, by the end of the day, you're going to have a headache, you know?
Yeah.
I can't wait for it to go away either. But it is a weird, like, in the beginning of the pandemic, the flights were empty, and everybody was super grateful that you showed up for your job. And now the flights are full, and everybody's super annoyed at you, like, for making sure. Like, if we have to be like, I'm sorry, can you please put your mask over? Because they'll put it over their chin, but it's like, the FAA.
All the breathing parts are above the chin.
Right. And the FAA is like doing tests and they can fine us if we're not saying the words. Like,
right.
So like I worked a trip last week and this woman she was mad about it. She wanted to argue about it. And like everybody kept trying to kind of be like, hey, I'm sorry. We just need you to put the mask on. And so all the flight attendants said something, then the casting came over and said something, then the ops agent came over and said something, then the ops agent takes her off to have a conversation about it, and then she comes back on, and she's like, got it off, and she's cursing like crazy, and she's like, you can't make me do it now, and she's grabbing up her stuff, and she leaves the plane, and so here we've had this massive delay, just so she can leave the plane, just because she didn't want to wear the mask, and then we realize, oh, her husband is still on the plane. Like, he didn't break up with her. It was terrible. Of course, the flight attendants were doing this, but when she left, everybody was so annoyed about the delay that they're applauding that she's leaving. And then her husband is just there by the window, head ducked, turned down over a book, not making eye contact with anyone. And he did not go with her. He went to vacation without her.
Whew. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Lacey, for chatting with us. This is like a super fun episode. Please come back. So this was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page. Our guest was
Lacey Walden.
And we are closing this very exciting chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.